If you want to turn, we'll look at some verses in the book of Esther. The book of Esther. It's right after Nehemiah, before Job, and feel free to turn and follow along if you'd like to do that. There's a phrase that Mordecai, the uncle to Esther, says to his niece, Esther. He says, "Who knoweth whither thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knoweth whither thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" We've looked at this book in years past. It's been a long time, and I pray that the Lord will bless us to receive a blessing and pray that it'll be an encouragement to us. There are some main characters in this story. There's a king, Ahasuerus, may not be pronouncing that exactly right. And then there's a man named Haman, another one named Mordecai, and then his niece, Esther. And we'll look at just the setting of this story, and then what leads up to Mordecai's statement to Esther. God is sovereign. God is in control. We believe that God is sovereign over our salvation, and He has His times in His hand. And we believe that God either causes or God allows everything that happens. There's not any surprises to God. God isn't caught off guard. God isn't up there wringing His hands and debating about whether something's going to be out of control. God is in control, and He's in control all the time. And I'm thankful for that. Aren't you thankful that He doesn't leave it up to us, but that it's in His hands? I'm thankful that this earth, folks recognize and honor Earth Day, and they think that they can preserve and prolong this earth. But I'm thankful that the end result is that this earth is going to all be burned up. It's going to all be consumed. And it's not going to happen 1 minute before God is ready for it to happen. I don't think that we're going to prolong the lifespan of the earth. It doesn't mean that we're not to be good stewards of what God's blessed us with. But God is sovereignly, completely in control. In our lives, we can oftentimes look back. We can look backwards and we can see oftentimes almost the finger or the hand of God in our life. We can see different events that maybe led to certain things. We can see different people that came into our lives. We can see certain circumstances, and when we look back, we can almost always recognize the hand of God. We would like to see that going forward. We would like to know that things are mapped out, and we would like to be able to see the map. We'd like to be able to lay the map out and be able to know the route and to know it clearly. We'd like to be able to know what challenges are going to go before us. And we'd like to know what the outcome is going to be. But God doesn't work that way. God calls us to exercise the faith that He's given us. And we'll see that this experience that Esther had and the experience that Mordecai had, that they were exercising the faith that God had given them. They didn't know what the outcome would be, but they went forward serving the Lord. We're to wait on the Lord. We understand that we're to wait on the Lord and we're to look to the Lord and we're to seek the Lord. But when we wait on the Lord, that doesn't mean that we don't do anything. We're aggressively laboring and walking and pursuing as we wait on the Lord. We'll see in this experience, this great example that it leads up to, of how that Queen Esther and Mordecai, how that they went forward, and they went forward in faith, not knowing the outcome, but believing in a God that could deliver if He so desired to do that. And so we'll dive into this book and pray the Lord would bless us for a few minutes. The first chapter, and we'll just sort of paraphrase the first chapter. The king was on his throne, and in the first chapter it says that they had a great big party. They had a great big feast. There was a lot of eating and drinking, and folks began to become merry. And so in the height of the celebration, the king says, I want my wife to come out, Queen Vashti. I want her to come out and I want her to pass by in the midst of everybody because she is so beautiful and it'll be a sight for folks to see. And so the king sends and calls for Queen Vashti to come before the king to wear the crown, the royal crown. It says in verse 11, to bring Vashti the queen before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princess her beauty, for she was fair to look upon. And folks that knew the king knew that you didn't oppose the king. You didn't challenge the king. You didn't question the king. He had authority in his kingdom. He could call for your life to be at hand. And you just didn't challenge. If the king called, you answered. If the king said jump, you said how high. But it says that Queen Vashti, it says that she refused to come at the king's command. And it says the king was very wroth and his anger burned in him. And it says that he was angry, he was wroth, and it began to be a concern for all of those that were in the kingdom. They said, well, king, if you let this happen, Then all of the other ladies in the kingdom, they're not going to honor their husband. They're not, when the husband says come, they're not going to come. When the husband speaks, they're not going to listen. And they're going to feel like that they can be rebellious against their husband as well if you allow Vashti to stay in the same position that she's been. And so he listens to the counsel of the other folks, and then he removes her from her position of the throne of queen. And it says that he sent out letters in verse 22 and to every province according to the writing thereof, to every man after their language, that every man should bear rule in his own house, and that it should be published according to the language of every people. He said, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to have Vashti not honoring the king. And I'm not going to have her maintain that role as queen. And we're not going to set that image out among the kingdom. And so he removed her from that role and that position. In chapter 2, it begins to tell us about Esther. And Esther's mother and father had died, and Esther was brought up by her uncle. And that is Mordecai. And it says in verse 7 of chapter 2, it says that she was brought up by Mordecai. And it says that her mother and father had died. And it says that she also, like Vashti, was very beautiful. That she was very beautiful to look upon. And that she had a real precious spirit about her as well. She had a real meek, she had a real humble, she had a precious spirit, and she was beautiful to look upon. And so when they begin to, they just basically had a beauty contest for the new queen. And it was quite a process that takes place. And as they had this contest, Esther was chosen. Now, looking back upon the situation, you'll be able to see the hand of God in even allowing Esther to fulfill this role. In God working behind the scenes to put things together in such a way that Esther could be chosen to this position. And So Mordecai and Esther, Mordecai had raised Esther. She honored Mordecai and she listened to what he said. And it says that in chapter 2 that basically the king chose Esther, and he eventually chose her to be queen. He blessed her with the crown and blessed her to be queen. It says, in those days, while Mordecai would go and check on Esther every day, he would go to the gate of the king's palace. And there were those, even though Mordecai could not go into the palace, there were those that were in the palace that had direct communication with Esther. There were those within the palace that knew how Esther was doing. And so when Esther was filling that role and living in the king's palace, Mordecai still, her old uncle was still concerned and still concerned for the welfare of Esther. And so Esther was chosen to be queen for the king, and Mordecai continued to communicate through those that were at the king's gate, and those that would give him the report, and then he would give them a report, and they would go to Esther and share that as well. But there was a man that was in the company of the king, one of the king's chamberlains, and he was promoted. And his name was Haman. And you'll see some of the thoughts that Haman had, some of the experiences that Haman had. And you'll see that even maybe in your own life, you've known folks like that. And God forbid that we would ever embrace any of the Haman tactics, because we'll see what the end result was for Haman. But Haman was really close to the king. He had been promoted. And when Haman would walk by, you know, folks in the service, they salute folks that are in higher positions of authority. And when folks would walk by and they saw Haman and they saw the authority that Haman had, they would bow down and they would honor Haman and they would speak highly of Haman. And he was a man of prestige and he was right there close to the king. And so he went around and folks would really build him up. Folks would honor Haman. A lot of folks would do it. But Mordecai, this old uncle, he wouldn't do it. He didn't. Have you ever had an old uncle like that? He doesn't buy into it. He saw through it. Mordecai did. He said, I'm not going to honor him. He's just a man. So it says that as Haman was walking around and he came in Mordecai's presence and Mordecai would not bow down and honor him, it says that Haman became angry. Haman became so wroth that it absolutely consumed and obsessed every part of his life. Haman was in a great position with the king. Haman was in a great position with the kingdom. Haman had it all. Haman had access to the riches. He had access to a lot of the things that went on within the kingdom. And he was basically the king's right-hand man. But it obsessed him that when he walked by, this old feeble Jew wouldn't bow down and give him honor. And so no matter what else happened, Haman couldn't enjoy it. You ever known anybody like that? They've been in a setting that they've had a lot of blessings. They've experienced a lot of deliverances from God. But there's one thing that's deep down, that's inside, and it eats on them all the time. And no matter that everything else is going right, that one thing obsesses them all the time. That's how Haman was. Look at how it eats on him. This is an example of bitterness and how that we ought not to embrace that and ought to pray that God deliver us from it. So it says that in those days, while Mordecai sat at the king's gate, the two king's chamberlains, it says that at the door, that Haman wanted to even destroy Mordecai's life, but he knew that he couldn't just go out and do it. And so he began to come up with a scheme. He began to devise something. You ever experienced vain imaginations? Well, here Haman is experiencing some vain imaginations. And here he begins to devise something to get to his desired end or his ultimate motive. He begins to design something in his mind, and then he has some help of other folks that begin to listen, and they begin to come up with an idea that since the Jews as a whole do not honor the king, we're going to see if we can get the king to pass a law that all the Jews that have not honored the king, that their life will be taken. And so as a result, this will take care of Mordecai. He begins to sort of take the backdoor approach. Did you know that it's interesting? But when folks begin to do that, you may think that, or folks may think that we're being successful, but God knows the ultimate motive. If we ever take a backdoor approach to get at somebody, or to make them pay, God knows. And it was revealed here as we read in chapter 3. When Haman saw Mordecai, that he bowed not, nor did give him reverence, it says Haman was full of wrath. In verse 8, Haman said unto the king, he says, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of the kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws, therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. Here's Haman's sort of backdoor approach to get at Mordecai. He says, if it please the king. That's interesting, the way that he's putting it to the king. He says, if it please the king, let it be written. You see, Haman's coming up and he says, there is a people. He says, they don't honor you. He says, their laws are different from yours. And he says, it's not really to the profit of your kingdom. It's not to the profit of you to still suffer them. He says, if it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And he says, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have the charge of this business to bring it into the king's treasuries. He basically says, you can take their, if you pass this decree, their lives will be taken, and the folks that do it will be paid to do it. And he says, the king took his ring from his hand, and he gave it to Haman, and he signed it. That this was a good decree, this was correct, and that he would set this decree in motion. It says that he passed this law, he passed this decree with the signature, with the signing of his ring. And then in the latter part of the chapter, it says that letters were sent out by post to all the provinces to destroy. In verse 13, it says, to destroy and kill and cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month. It says, to take the spoil of them, what's left over for them for a prey. He even determined a date that this would actually happen. And so the date was set. The letters went out. Verse 15 says, the letters went out by the post. And it says that all of the Jews that their laws did not agree with the king's, all the Jews that didn't honor the king, that their lives would be taken, the children, the old, the little, the women, in one day. Now, you say, well, that doesn't apply to me. I've not experienced anything like that. What if there was a decree that was passed today in the United States of America? that said all Christians that don't give in to a liberal or an all-inclusive way of thinking are going to be put in prison, or better yet, that their lives are going to be taken. There are countries, we're so sheltered from it, we've been shielded from it so much that we can't hardly even imagine it, we can't hardly embrace it, but there's countries in which Christians are persecuted just for the sake of their religion, just for the sake of their belief in Jesus Christ, that their life is on the line. You can even go back in this country in which we live, and as we mentioned to you before, that just up in the Boston area and down in Virginia, that just over a few hundred years ago, that the Baptists were persecuted to the point of even death in some cases because their religion didn't agree with those that were in positions of authority. You say, well, that doesn't really apply to me today, but it could. And what would we do if a decree like that was passed? Wonder if that was passed, that if the law authorities were going to be on the lookout for Christians, and you knew that next Sunday, it's a very good possibility that you'd be arrested if you came to the house of the Lord to worship the Lord. Would we try to come here? Or would we call around and maybe meet in a few homes? We might go up to the Eapons. Might go to the Franklins. We might go to the Greenfields. Good place to worship, be up at the Irwin's Farm. That'd be a good place to go. But would we go if we thought that we might be at risk of being arrested, persecuted? Would we still do it? Do we just worship the Lord because it's convenient, because it's easy, because it's comfortable? Or would we be committed if we were challenged like that? Look what happens. The decree was passed, and another event occurs before that. It says that when Mordecai, chapter 4, and I encourage you to read these in detail, real, real good. It says when Mordecai perreceived this, that he rent his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, he went out into the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry. And he began to mourn, and he began to fast, and he began to pray when this decree went out and when this decree was known. And it says that in every province, whither the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting and weeping and wailing. And many lay in sackcloth and ashes. And it says that Esther's maids came to her and told her. And it says Esther the queen was exceedingly grieved. And she even sent a change of clothes. She sent raiment out to Mordecai, but he chose not to embrace it. He was in so much grief and so much sorrow. And it comes down that Mordecai, the folks came to the gate, and Mordecai, I'm just going to paraphrase it here. You can read it in detail. It says Mordecai gave a copy of this decree to one of the king's men to take to Esther. And so this letter, this decree goes to Esther, and Mordecai tells Esther, sends a message to Esther, says, Esther, you have an audience with the king. You are able to be in the presence of the king, and you have an audience with the king, and you need to go and plead the case of your people. You need to go and plead the case of the Jews. You need to go and plead the case of your people. And Esther sends a message back to Mordecai. And she says, I can't do that. She said, everybody knows that if you go into the inner court of the king, where the king dwells, If you go into the inner court of the king, where the king dwells, and you go without an invitation, your life can be taken right then. He can call for your life. If you go in there and you've not had an invitation to go to the king, he may or may not spare your life. And unless he puts out the golden scepter and touches you with the golden scepter, your life will be taken. You don't know if you go in to see the king, if he's going to spare your life or if he's not. And she says, so I'm not real excited about going in to see the king. He hasn't called for me. If he calls for me, maybe I'll have an opportunity to talk to him. But he hasn't called for me. And since he hasn't called for me, if I go, I'm at great risk that I'm going to lose my life. Mordecai comes down, and when she sends the message back to Mordecai, Mordecai sends a message back to Esther. And he says, Esther, by the way, do you think that if all of the Jews, if their lives are taken, do you think that just because you're in the position that you're in, just because you're the queen, do you think that your life's going to be spared? He says, think not that thyself that thou shalt escape the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then there shall an enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. He says, God may deliver some of your people, but very likely, Esther, you and your house, your lives are going to be taken because you fall under that decree. And then Mordecai, who is an example of faith, Mordecai, who's looking for a source of deliverance, Mordecai, who sees that it just might be possible that God might work through Esther, Mordecai, who sees that it just may be that God has arranged that Esther fill this role as queen for such a time as this. He says, Esther, who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Well, when that report goes back to Esther, Esther says, I'm sure she was struggling in her own thinking, but when that went back to Esther, here's what she said. She said, go gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan. And she says, and fast for me and neither eat or drink for 3 days, 3 days, nights, or a day, for a 3-day period. Don't eat or drink. You fast and pray. She says, I'm also going to fast and pray, and all of my maidens will likewise fast and pray. And she said, then after 3 days, she said, I'll go into the king, which is not according to the law. I'm going contrary to the law. And she said, and this is pretty important to see, she said, I'll go into the king. I'm asking you to fast and pray. I'm asking the people to fast and pray. And she said, I'll go into the king, which is contrary to the law. This is out of the norm. And she said, and if I perish, I perish. But I'm going to go. That shows me that Esther didn't know the outcome. Esther knew what the right thing was to do. And God blessed Esther with a conviction and a faith to do the right thing. And Esther knew that God could deliver. Esther knew that God had delivered. Esther knew that God had provided for her in the past. Esther knew that when she didn't have a mother or a father, that God provided an old uncle to take care of her. Esther knew that all of her needs had been met. Esther knew that God had worked in a miraculous way to bring her to the position that she was. She was just this little orphan girl. And now she was raised up to sit by the king, to the position of queen. Esther knew that God had been with her. And I'm sure that if Esther looked and she looked back upon her life, she could see that God had provided for her. God had sustained her. God had met her every need. But she knew that God was not obligated to deliver her. And she knew it would be only by the mercy of a loving God. She didn't know whether He would or not. But she went forward anyway. That's why it shows me that we don't have to see clearly what the outcome's going to be before we go forward. God shows us a lot of times from where we are backwards. But God doesn't always show us from where we are forward. But God does give us the tools and the things that we need in order to go forward. Esther could look back upon her life and see how God had delivered her and sustained her in miraculous ways. Esther said, I'll go and I'll try to plead a petition before the king. And if he doesn't reach out the golden scepter, then I'll perish. And if I do, I'll perish. But I'll perish doing the right thing. Wouldn't you like to have a conviction like that? Well, it comes on down, in chapter 5. And it says that Esther arrayed herself in the royal apparel, and she went into the inner court of the king's house. And she went over against the king's royal throne. She came up against the royal throne and over against the gate of the house. And it says that when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, that it says that when the king saw her at that point, that's when he could have said, "You're not worthy to be here. Your life is to be taken. You're gone." But it says that when Queen Esther went into the court, it says that she obtained favor in his sight. And it says the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. And it says Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. And that was a sign that her life was to be spared. Aren't you thankful that when you and I come before a perfect and holy and righteous God, that He's merciful to us to extend that golden scepter out to us? And He doesn't destroy us because of our sinfulness and our ungodliness and our unrighteousness. And He doesn't rebuke us and say, "You've already been here 1,000 times. You've already brought that petition to me 100 times or hundreds of times." But God reaches out His hand of mercy when He touches us. Well, I believe also that when it says that she obtained favor in His sight, I believe that it's very probable that it's God that tendered the heart of the king. You say, did those prayers work? Did the 3 days of prayer and fasting help? I believe it was God that tendered the heart of the king. Prayer works. prayer and fasting works. God is not a God upon a throne to be manipulated by us. But God is pleased when we come before Him and worship Him in prayer and fasting. And we're told that He is touched with the feelings of our infirmities. Well, it says that He held out the scepter. Esther touched the golden scepter. Her life was spared. And so she says, the king comes and he says, Esther, what is your petition? Esther says, I'd like to have a banquet. King was always ready for a banquet. And she said, I'd like to have a big banquet and I want the special guest to be Haman. King says, I think we can put that together. And she says, then I'll announce what my request is. He says, I'll give you your answer up to the half of the kingdom. Basically, you've got a blank checkbook, Esther. Whatever it is you want, I'm going to give it to you. So they make preparations for this big banquet. And Esther says, I want to invite Haman. Well, the word gets out to Haman that Esther has called for a banquet, and it's primarily going to be Haman, the key people are going to be Haman, the king, and Esther. And Haman is, boy, he's going around and he's pulling up his lapels big time, and he's telling all of his family. He's called his family in and he says, you won't believe this. Not only am I the right-hand man for the king, but I'm also right there for the queen. And they're throwing a party for me. And so he goes out and gets a new set of clothes, the finest he can get. He tells his family and they're all excited. And he says, things are just going great. He says, in fact, things couldn't be going better. He says, I'm in with the king. I'm in with the queen. It just couldn't be better. They're going to have a big party and I am the honoree. I'm the one that I sat at the head of the table. And he was so excited. But he says, you know, he tells his family and he tells his friends. He says, but you know, he says, I still can't enjoy it. I can't enjoy it because it just bugs me to death about that old Jew, Mordecai. I'm a man that deserves all kinds of honor. The king gives me honor. The queen gives me honor. In fact, they're throwing a party for me. And yet Mordecai would not bow down and give me reverence. And as long as Mordecai is around, I'm not going to be able to enjoy all this other. So his family gets together and they have a family meeting and they begin to toss out ideas and they say, well, I tell you, since you're in such a good position with the king and the queen, why don't you allow us to build a set of gallows and we'll see to it that Mordecai's life is taken on these gallows. Before this actually takes place, it says that in chapter 6, it says that the king couldn't sleep. His sleep was removed from him. You ever had any sleepless nights? Well, rather than take something, he called for some folks to come read to him. And he says, you have him bring the book of the Chronicles, some of the things that have happened in the past, some of the history, some of the things that have happened in the past. And so this reader comes and he begins to read to the king this night when he couldn't sleep. And, you know, it just may be that God is the one that stirred his sleep. Just may be that God is the one that allowed this gentleman to do the reading to turn right to that portion of history to read. And he begins to read and it tells about this man named Mordecai. And it says that that there were two men that were keepers of the king's gate, and these two men that worked for the king, they were disgruntled with the king, and they wanted to do a conspiracy. You read a lot about that, about these terrorist attacks and how that people were able to thwart a terrorist attack in Paris or in a different country or the United States. Well, here these two men were going to attack the king, and they were going to take his life. And Mordecai, who was at the king's gate, he overheard this. And so he reported it. And when the issue was sought out, it was correct. These two men were terrorists, and they were going to take the life of the king. And it says that they were beheaded. Well, this was all written down in the Chronicles. So the king's listening to this, and he says, so there were two men that were going to take my life, and my life was spared because this man named Mordecai. He says, by the way, what happened to him? What did we do? Did we give him a bonus? Did we give him a gift certificate? Did we do something nice for him? What did we do for Mordecai? They said, well, doesn't show that there's anything that's been done. So the king, I think God has a sense of humor too. The king calls his right-hand man in, Haman, and he said, if you had somebody that had really done some good things for you, if you had somebody that you wanted to really honor, if you had somebody that you really wanted to show appreciation to, what would you do? Now, Haman is there, and it says that you can go through and read it, that Haman was just, he was just getting all excited. Brother Compton would say he's full of himself. Well, he was getting all excited about this. And so Haman thinks he's talking about him. And so he begins to say, well, there's just nobody else he could be talking about. He's talking about me. And so he says, well, I think if I was going to honor somebody like that, here's what I'd do. I'd take the king's horses, and I'd take the king's top men, and I would put this individual that you want to honor, I'd put him on that horse, and I would even let him wear the king's apparel. And I would parade him around through the streets, and I would let it be known that this man should just get all kinds of honor. And so he said, the king's listening to Haman. And he says, you know what? That's a great idea. That's exactly what I want you to do. And I want you to be the one that leads the horse around. And I want you to go out and get this man named Mordecai. And I want you to put the king's raiment on him. I want you to put the crown up on him. I want you to deck him out, and I want you to put him on the king's horse, and I want you to go around, and I want you to lead him around through the kingdom here so that folks can pay honor to him. Can you imagine how Haman must have felt right then? All of a sudden, I expect he probably began to see the handwriting on the wall. Well, this takes place, and then they have the banquet. And the banquet takes place, and Haman is there, and all of a sudden, Haman begins to get concerned. And even his wife tells him, she said, I think you're in trouble. I think you're in a big fix, Haman. I think you backed yourself into a corner. And I don't see many ways that you can get out of this. So they have this big banquet. And there is Haman. And all of a sudden he's lost a lot of the zeal and the enthusiasm that he had, because he now begins to realize that he probably messed up. It comes down and it tells us that when they have this banquet that the king asks Esther, what is it that, what is your request? And so Esther at that time reveals her petition to the king. And she says, there's been a petition that's been passed to take the life of me and my people. And I'm going to beg you that you might deliver us. The power's in your hand to deliver us from this wicked man. And he says, by the way, who is this wicked man that you're talking about? She points to Haman right there. Says the king was wroth. The king went out into the courtyard and he was walking around and he was wroth and he was ready to let Haman have it. And to make matters worse, for Haman it just went from bad to worse. And if you try to take things into your own hand, and if you try to take vengeance into your own hand, and you try to get revenge with other folks, there's a real good indication that things will go from bad to worse. So while the king is out walking in this courtyard and he's stewing, he is hot, he is ready to let his wrath come down upon Haman. While he's out there, Haman goes up to the queen and he says, will you at least talk to the king and ask him to spare my life? And he goes up to her bed. Maybe she was in bed. I don't know what the setting was. But when the king comes back in, he sees Haman at her bed. And then he begins to get more angry. And his wrath is uncontrollable. And he passes the sentence upon Haman's life, and he's made aware, some of his postmen or some of the men that keep the gate, they say, well, we're going to tell you the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that Haman created and built gallows for Mordecai to be hanged upon, and the king himself passes the sentence upon him. He says, you go and hang Haman on his own gallows. Esther didn't know what the outcome would be. But Esther knew that she had to do the right thing. God doesn't call us to know what the future is. God doesn't tell us oftentimes what the outcome is going to be. But God calls us to do the right thing today. And to trust that He'll take care of what's down the road. And He did that for Esther. And He did it for Mordecai. And He did it for the Jews. Looking back, we can see the hand of God in it. From the point where Esther was when she made the decision that she would go before the king, what she knew is that God had delivered her in the past. What she knew is that she had a faith in a God that was able to deliver. What she knew is that it was the right thing to do it. And she did it. May God bless you.